Welcome to Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Amy Benacorso, who converted to Catholicism in college and overcame many dating disappointments before she found her husband, Attilio. Now she shares her lessons learned with singles so they can take charge of their lives and expertly navigate the dating scene. With Amy Benacorso, we're going inside the pages of her book, How to Get to I Do, a dating guide for Catholic women, published by Servant Books. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you.
I just love How to Get to I Do, a dating guide for Catholic women. You must know that I've already passed this out to about five people that I know.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
Well, it's very difficult, especially for those women out there who are trying to maintain a lively faith, to live it out in this world, to be able to do just that, given what our secular culture in every area is trying to tell them is the norm. But it's not the norm, is it?
Well, no. And there are ways to find other like-minded people these days that are available to anyone, no matter where they live in the country. Like, they can go on CatholicMatch.com, they can go on AveMaria.com. Those websites are created specifically for people who are trying to find other Catholics, like-minded Catholics. And I think that's wonderful, because in this day and age, we don't have as much of the small town type of social networks mm-hmm. that my parents had, for example. My mom was introduced to my dad by her uncle, and I hear from people that sort of introduction was more common mm-hmm. maybe 30, 40 years ago before. It's not quite as common these days, so people have to be more creative, but the tools are coming out to help us in the modern world find other people of a similar mindset.
And I think that's the beauty of How to Get to I Do, a dating guide for Catholic women, because you do give so many helps to know what you can trust. And primarily because you've had to kind of navigate that minefield yourself up until the point where you met your wonderful husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's very hard to figure out who you can trust and who is really going to be that great partner you're looking for. In chapter one, I talk a little bit about that in terms of being careful about the checklist, because it's one thing to, you know, go on Catholic Match or Ave Maria and do the little checklist they have for this, for, you know, what the other person believes in religiously. Mm-hmm. But I started out, you know, very checklisty in my 20s, as I describe in chapter one, and I found out that we really have to look deeply at people, because I met somebody who went to Mass very often, who had all the same religious beliefs as me, and I thought I struck gold, because mm-hmm. on the surface, all the great things that I was looking for, the compatibility type elements, were there. But when I got seriously ill, he really couldn't handle it emotionally. And I know I'm not the only person who's seen people kind of freak out in situations like that, because I met a coworker who had the same situation. He was dating a devout Christian girl, and he ended up hospitalized, and she couldn't handle it either, and the mm-hmm. relationship quickly fell apart. So I think that, you know, it's important to, you know, try to find somebody initially who really does share your religious beliefs and is compatible in that way, but also be aware and open to that deeper, more authentic part of a person that cannot be categorized in a checklist.
You help us right in the very beginning of the book to value discernment, to mm-hmm. discern, and I think that's the key, as opposed to making decisions about people or judging people. It's about discerning, and the first thing that you really feel it's important for people to do is to discern whether or not they have a call to the single life, or if they really are called to the married life, and to know what that
right.
looks like.
Chapter two is Discernment is Empowerment, and that was such an important chapter, I think, in the book, because in the Catholic community, when you come across devout Catholics who are in their 20s, a lot of them will be kind of trying to discern what they're called to. And I have found that, at least in my area, there's a big push for people to discern religious life, so much so that sometimes people don't give the right amount of enthusiasm and energy to discerning marriage, to figuring out if they're called to a certain profession. Mm-hmm. All of those things that really make up a complete life purpose. It's not only if you're called to religious life. And I think that's important because once I did discern religious life, but once that time had passed, and I do think people need to put a little bit of a time limit on that because some people can go back and forth for many, many years. Mm-hmm. But once I figured out deep in my heart and through my prayer life that I felt very strongly that God was calling me to marriage, it's like a compass. You have this compass that kind of helps you discern your relationships, figure out what direction you should be going in, because you know that God really wants this sort of life for me. And that helped, I think, in my whole dating journey, because I had other female friends who were beautiful, talented, very intelligent, and had a good prayer life, it seemed, but they didn't focus a lot, perhaps, on the discernment and what God was really asking them to do. So it meant that they just kind of meandered along. And unfortunately, a lot of time was wasted. Maybe some opportunities passed them by because they really didn't have that internal compass on what their calling was.
When you really enter into that discernment and you've gone through the process and you've had guidance from hopefully a spiritual director or a pastor or someone mm-hmm. who can help you to navigate that, it's to trust that then, to trust and try, I guess it would be try to be at peace, if not mm-hmm. fully at peace with that calling.
Definitely, definitely. And I think that, you know, sometimes it seems like these days things are just so complicated that it can be harder for people to find peace and happiness. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that's one reason I saw so many young people jump on and off different vocation bandwagons without, you know, coming to that place where they had certainty. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, discernment is more than hopping from different monasteries or convents and talking to different people and hopping from date to date to date. I mean, there really has to be a deep inner, you should try to find a deep inner knowing that isn't easily shaken when you come home from work and you've had a bad day. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of thing. It shouldn't be so temporary. And I found that a lot of people had difficulty, you know, reaching that point of certitude and peace and calm.
Well, part of it when someone is being called to the religious life is to, in that discernment process, is to identify the charism that they have in their heart, whether it's service to the poor or it's contemplation or that type of charismatic understanding of where their heart's being led. And that, I think you articulate pretty well in the book when it talks about once you've discerned the call to the married life, this is what you look for then in the right person for you as a spouse. It's more than just the fact that they're maybe a Catholic or a Christian. What are some of the things that somebody should look for in can I say it, the right man?
Sure. I think a deep compassion is very important. That is an element, frankly, that I found missing sometimes when I was dating people who, you know, really had it together on the surface in a lot of ways. If you're going to spend your whole life with someone, you need somebody who has a good, you know, a big heart. I think that's very important. And you're actually blessed if you have to deal with some sort of illness or crisis as you're dating. Mm-hmm. Because to see how somebody responds to those things can tell you so much about a person. Mm-hmm. And you need somebody who can weather those ups and downs with you. And so I've got, you know, a story or two in the book about those types of situations. Like one of the stories in the book, I had a friend who her father was dying when she was dating her now husband. Mm-hmm. But, you know, during one scheduled time they had put aside for a date, her dad fell ill and ended up in the hospital. So that superseded or made their plan a little bit not appropriate anymore because she had to go to the hospital. But it was so charming because the guy went to the hospital with her mm-hmm. and hung out in the hospital cafeteria with her and her family and didn't make an issue of it. And that's the sort of things that I think you really need to look for. And sometimes I didn't get that message when I was dating in my 20s. I didn't have anybody tell me those types mm-hmm. of stories really early on. So So that's how I personally got sidetracked at one point and was looking so much at surface things and judging so quickly on surface things. But it says deeper things about somebody who's really going to be compassionate and stand by you when things are tough. And that relates to everyone, not just Catholics, but it's a message I felt was really important to get out there.
Well, what are some of the mistakes in dating? I mean, as you said, in your 20s, there are some things you didn't look for, weren't able to identify, because you weren't aware. What are some of the mistakes that people can make?
Well, for Catholics in particular, I think that there are a lot of books out there about something called courtship. Mm-hmm. For me and my lady friends, we found that when we tried hard to make our relationships fit in a courtship prescribed format, that we really messed some things up without intending to, or it wasn't realistic. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one mistake, because I tried to make a lot of my relationships early on fit in a courtship model, where for the first 2 to 3 months, it's just friendship, getting to know. It's a different pace and a different vocabulary than is being used in the modern world. Even if you're dating amongst Catholics, observant Catholics, mm-hmm. the words everybody else is using are things like dating. They aren't saying courtship. Even if they've read the books and have been very open mm-hmm. to the concepts, it's not catching on in an everyday sense. So if you go into the world with a courtship guidebook model, mm-hmm. it's likely that you're going to get confused and confuse the people you're dating. So that was one mistake I felt I made. Also, another mistake I made was, well, I'm very intellectual, I'm very well-read, and I'm a convert, so I studied theology pretty well when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I would just kind of approach men from a perspective of pure doctrinal integrity. It's like I came at them from a very academic perspective. Mm-hmm. And I would just kind of quiz them on all these little details of the faith. And I know lots of women will, they'll get to this place where if another person doesn't believe exactly how they do on very minute details that aren't even things you would confess, mm-hmm. they say, oh, he's not the same as me. And really, I mean, I knew people who were both very Orthodox Catholics, but they would find some, like, very tiny theological point of philosophy or something, and they would just get into an argument, and that would be it. Yet they would be both very devout Catholics who are very well-read and very interested in theology, but they would find these little things that would just turn into bigger issues than they really were. That mm-hmm. was one thing I saw.
There are areas where you can grow together. I mean, we learn mm-hmm. from each other, and you can grow with each other. In the process of dating, do you feel that you needed to date just Catholic men?
I tried to. After I converted, I very much wanted to marry another Catholic, because when you marry somebody of the same religion, things are just easier. Mm-hmm. You don't have to try so hard to find solutions for things that aren't matching up. But I tried for years to find somebody in the Catholic dating scene, and at one point I gave up, and that's when I went on Match.com, and I just thought, I need to open the possibilities here and just see what God's going to do. And it's funny, because I went out on a date with one guy who I don't think was Catholic, and you know, he was very nice, but we went out for a few dates, and that was it. But he was very respectful and very nice, and I think sometimes people get too afraid of people who aren't Catholics. It doesn't mean that they're heathen or whatnot. Mm-hmm. They can be very nice, professional men, but I ended up meeting my husband, Attilio, and he's Catholic. He wasn't quite as theologically well-versed as some of the people I dated earlier on, but mm-hmm. he had a bigger heart, and he was very, you know, he had all the great human virtues. And so he's who I married, but he definitely was not, you know, in the primary ultra-observant Catholic scene that I initially targeted. And in my chapter, Growing Outside Yourself, I talk a little bit about this issue that people wonder about, you know, is it okay to marry somebody who's not Catholic? And after, I think that, you know, you have to be open to God, and perhaps sometimes it can happen and be okay. If you've tried for years to try to find an observant Catholic and you aren't finding him, is that God sending you a message? saying, I want you to be more open. I would not have converted and become Catholic if a guy hadn't decided to date me. He was Catholic. I wasn't Catholic. He decided it was okay to date me. Had he been super rigid and not dated me just because I wasn't Catholic, there's a possibility I wouldn't have converted. Mm. So I think it's important for people to recognize that God has sometimes very big, beautiful plans, and you have to be kind of open to that natural synergy that you feel with other people and that natural compatibility that comes out. And ask right questions. I mean, good questions. I have a chapter on things to consider before committing. There are questions you should ask of somebody. You don't want to go just on emotions. But I do think that there are people who just were not raised Catholic who are very good people and could be very good spouses and may choose to convert if given the opportunity.
Well, your safety net, per se, would be then if you've truly entered into a discernment process and you're walking closely in prayer with God, but you also have counselors, again, whether it's a spiritual director or a relationship with a pastor, or maybe just really solid spiritual friendships that you've cultivated over the years, that through that process, you would know whether or not, in that discernment, whether this is someone that you should be dating if they are not Catholic. I mean, you'll have
I think that the reactions of the people around you matter. You know, what your friends have to say, what your parents have to say. If you have a close spiritual director who's become a close confidant, you'd want to introduce, you know, whoever you're, you know, thinking of seriously dating to that person. I think it does matter how, you know, other people respond to someone, and you can tell a lot through that. Mm-hmm. Because I think that it will resonate with them if they see that somebody genuinely cares about you and your well-being. Mm-hmm. And somebody who clearly has strong human virtues, that stuff people a lot of times intuitively will pick up. And also, I mean, through the dating process, they'll learn kind of how things are going because you'll hopefully kind of share some things with them. So definitely, I think what other people see going on and how they respond, that can be very helpful. And I think that singles very much want to feel supported in prayer.
Yeah, I know in some areas that, unfortunately, in response to the needs of singles, they may be categorized in a broader group of singles, divorced, and widowed. And those are three major differences. Who are divorced may or may not have wanted that situation. The widows, that is something that they didn't expect, and their age differences with somebody who's single, who is genuinely trying to enter into either of those arenas for the first time, probably are not the groups to all mix together.
And yeah, that's very true. And it's been hard for me, too, because I wrote my book primarily for young women who had never been married before. Mm-hmm. And I get sometimes questions from women who are much older, maybe divorced, and it's a little bit different of a situation. So you're right. It is, you know, it requires a different type of discernment, I think.
Exactly. But it's good to try to come together. I mean, are you seeing that, or are you hearing that from around the areas of opportunities for the young Catholics to come together in settings so that they can meet those of similar heart?
You know, where I live in the D.C. area, there were so many good opportunities. And what I'm finding, though, and I had this experience as well, when you live in the suburbs, there aren't as many opportunities. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of young professionals who are really trying to move up with their career or get a good education, a lot of times they'll end up in cities. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in the suburbs, but after a certain point, I relocated to the city, D.C., because I was working there, I was getting a degree there, and there were so many events for young Catholics, young single Catholics. So I say in my book that in some cases, I think people need to be realistic, and if there aren't many opportunities in their area, I don't think it's, you know, crazy to consider relocation. I actually work with a fellow who He's an older gentleman now, but he told me at some point in his life he was offered a job to teach at a university in a very rural area. And he was a single Catholic, and he was looking to get married. And although it was a nice opportunity, he had other opportunities, and he said no thank you, because he realized that if he went out in the middle of nowhere, he would have fewer opportunities to meet Ms. Wright. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important to think strategically about where you're spending your time when you're looking for someone, because online makes it easier. So if you really can't relocate, I say put lots of eggs in the online dating basket. But for people who have flexibility, there are things you can do in your life to increase your chances of meeting someone.
When you talk about online, what are some of the pitfalls? I mean, there are a lot of people that are, well, particularly parents who are watching their young daughters as they navigate in this area, that they're very nervous. What are some of the pitfalls and things you should watch out for?
Well, you want to watch out for, well, let's see. There's so many things that happened to me with online dating. I had more positive experiences than negative experiences. I really did. Mm-hmm. So when people tell me that they're jittery about going online or they're worried about something bad happening to them, really, if you've got good social skills and street smarts in the real world, I think that it's possible to also apply those skills to the online world. I think there are plenty more opportunities than pitfalls. One case where a guy changed his location mm-hmm. without saying he moved. So obviously there was something not honest about his profile. Mm-hmm. But there were plenty of other weird things that would have eventually told me there's no point in corresponding with this man anymore, because if you correspond with somebody for 2 to 3 months and there's no mention of phone calls or beyond phone calls, meeting or something like that, you know that it's not a promising relationship, and why are you wasting your time? Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of times one of the primary risks online is just getting into this pen pal mode where somebody has something to hide or they aren't really serious about getting into a genuine real-life relationship. So they just string a person along for months. And a very sweet Catholic girl might, you know, not realize what's going on and get her heart invested in something that's not going to lead anywhere. I think that's really one of the primary pitfalls, because if you're going to meet somebody for the first time, you should always do it in a public place. Mm-hmm. And as long as you observe that, you know, number one cardinal rule, I don't think that there's going to be a whole lot of risk involved with a first date with somebody you haven't met before in person. I always had first dates in the D.C. area in places where there were security guards in public. Mm-hmm. So there was really nothing that could have happened to me.
Well, I would imagine in some cases that's a better way of actually meeting someone. I mean, the risk that you take meeting someone, can I say it, at a bar or at some type of social hangout that may not necessarily be even within the spectrum or the realm of some faith area that anybody's even trying to profess or to live out that type of thing. I mean, it can be just as hazardous, if maybe not more so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I didn't really get any experience with the bar scene because I just kind of felt that what I'd heard about it was unsavory enough where I probably wouldn't be comfortable. Mm-hmm. But I've heard that people, you know, might drop something in your drink or whatever. So I tend to think online dating is more safe than some of the ways you can meet people in real life, or at least you can learn more about them before you meet them. You have an opportunity with the online dating world to trade some high-quality emails beforehand and even talk on the phone and mm-hmm. just kind of see how your gut reaction is to the person before you see them. I think it's important to take, you know, generally I took about 2 weeks to get to know somebody over email or phone before I met them in person. But once you get really comfortable with it, your intuition can really tell you a lot. It's amazing how the more you date, sometimes you're just better at picking out things. Mm-hmm. So, for example, with my husband, even though I typically got to know somebody for about 2 weeks before I met them in person, he was about to go to New Jersey for Easter to be with his family. And he was worried that somebody else was going to ask me out on a date before he got back and get me interested. So we only traded a few emails over a few days before I met him in person because I got a really good feeling off of him. Mm-hmm. And, I met him in public. It's a very public place. So, you know, sometimes intuition can go a long way, too.
Mm. Well, and how's married life?
It's good. It's good. It's very different from single life for me because I moved. So I'm no longer in the middle of D.C., and I sometimes miss that. Mm-hmm. I'm in the suburbs now. But it's really nice having a best friend here all mm-hmm. the time, somebody to talk to. And I think that, you know, that's one of the best parts of marriage, just being with a best friend all the time.
Did you get your compassionate guy?
Yeah. Definitely. I can tell him anything, and I really love that. Yeah. I don't know that all men are like that. I think some men are not as, I don't know, they just aren't as into talking about everything that's on my mind type of people. But Attilio is very good about just kind of the conversational component.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just sounds as though you've kind of entered into that new realm. I'm looking forward to your next book about how to get through marriage. And now that you've made it there, where do you go from here? You know, especially in those early years.
You know, it's funny because I've had some people suggest that, and I tell you, I'm very cautious because I kind of feel like I could write something about the first year of marriage, mm-hmm. but when I look around me and I see Attilio's grandparents, they've been married forever, mm-hmm. like 50, 60 years. I want to interview them.
Yep. I think that's the key, and that you will have your ups and your downs. You will have your hard times, but in those moments, if you can draw on your heart, you'll draw you closer and not push you further away. And that's mm-hmm. you know. Well, God bless you, Amy, for your book, and I wish we had more time. Any final thoughts?
Just I hope you all enjoy the book. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm very accessible. So if you've got a question or a comment, I'd love to hear from you.
God bless you and all you do. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
With Amy Benner-Corso, we've been going inside the pages of How to Get to I Do, a dating guide for Catholic women. To learn more or to obtain a copy of this book, go to servantbooks.org, the website for Servant Books, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and download this discussion along with many others, go to www.insidethepages.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.